Thank you for listening to the Faith Radio Mornings podcast. Enjoy the conversation.
Start your day connecting faith to life with Faith Radio Mornings.
Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. Welcome to your Wednesday. It is today is May 17th, and we are clipping away on the month of May. And as you are getting ready to go to your place of productivity, I'm so glad you tuned in with us. And maybe being home is your place of productivity today. So I wish you all the best, and that God will give you the strength to do what you need to do today. As I look at Romans 12, which is just one of my great favorite verses of all time, it says in verse 2, "Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will." And, of course, then we get into verse 9. It says, "Love must be sincere. Hate what is evil. Cling to what is good. Be devoted to one another in love. Honor one another above yourselves. Never be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervor serving the Lord." And then, of course, Romans 12:12, "Be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer. Share with the Lord's people who are in need. Practice hospitality." That's what we're hoping to do this morning, is a little hospitality as you get ready to go do your day. There is a lot of great program coming up today on the show. I'm very excited. We're going to talk to Jason Mitchell this morning, and he wrote a book called No Easy Jesus: How the Toughest Choices Lead to the Greatest Life. He says, because when you decided to follow Jesus, you didn't sign up for what was easiest. You signed up for what was best. And we're going to talk to him about a number of things. This might come up: how the toughest choices lead to the greatest life. I want to ask him about that. You can't be wrong with others and right with God, because if you're at odds with somebody in your life and you think that's okay, and then you think you're okay with God, maybe not. Let's check that out. Owning our pain, experiencing God's redemption. We all probably could use a little dose of that. And the good life versus the easy life. So when we come back from break, we're going to talk to Jason Mitchell, a guy just like me. He's got two first names. This is Bill Arnold here, and we are very excited that you have joined us this morning. And if you are living in the Hartford area, you're getting the president today. He travels to Connecticut for the first time since taking office. He's going to be in New London to deliver the commencement address to cadets at the U.S. Coast Guard Academy. As you might expect, a large number of protesters and supporters of the president are expected to be near the academy. All right, we're going to take a little break, and then when we come back, Jason Mitchell is going to be with us, and I can't wait. Be back in a minute. All right, 8 minutes after the hour, good morning. Jason Mitchell is a teaching pastor at LCBC, and that stands for Lives Changed by Christ. Pretty direct marketing there. I like that. And he likes drinking coffee and appreciates University of Alabama football, and he likes things rock and roll related, just like myself. And he's got two first names, just like me. So I'm already liking this guy. Jason, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much, Bill, for having me.
Yeah.
Great to be with you.
Let's talk a little bit about rock and roll just to get things started on this Wednesday morning. What do you like?
Man, I like it all. I love rockabilly all the way up to sort of modern day, modern day sounds.
And, okay.
I don't know, man. I grew up with, I grew up with a lot of it, and I just kind of, I've carried it through all my life here. So if it's got guitars and they're loud and it's got some, you know, it's got some heavy drums, I'm good with it.
Oh, I like you already. All right, congratulations on your new book, No Easy Jesus: How the Toughest Choices Lead to the Greatest Life. And I think, Jason, one of your points of the book is a lot of us have sort of settled for salvation someday, but we're not realizing that we can really experience a fuller life right now.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's interesting because as a pastor, I get to interact with, so many people who have, kind of divulged to me a couple of different frustrations or discouragements, I guess I should say, or disappointments that they've ended up having with faith. And it has nothing to do with sort of the vision that Jesus lays out for us, what it means to follow him. It just has everything to do with sort of our experience with it. And I think, Bill, a lot of times some of the common threads that I've tended to hear from people is they end up growing discouraged. And so, you know, they start out and they're passionate and it's sort of everything is new and they're making connections from their everyday life into, you know, what Jesus is calling them into. But then at some point they grow discouraged because they look around and they see others around them who are taking bold sort of risk-taking, you know, steps of faith. And they're sitting there going, man, I don't think I could ever do that. I don't know if I really want to do that. And so you kind of settle into this idea that that just must be for them. Like that deep, abiding, you know, abundant life, that must be for someone else. That's for the pastors. That's for the spiritually elite. That's for the people who don't have baggage like I have. And we kind of settle for discouragement. And some of us, I think, just get frustrated because, you know, we start out and we begin to walk with God, but then we realize, you know, a year's gone by or 2 years have gone by or a decade's gone by, and we're still struggling with some of the same things that we were struggling with a long time ago. And we get beat down by that frustration, and we sit there, and sometimes we just kind of believe the idea, well, that's just the way it's going to be. That's just the way our family talks to each other. Even though we know it hurts each other, that's just the way we talk to each other. That's just the way we handle money. Even though it's putting us more and more in debt and is hurting our financials, that's just the way we spend. I mean, you know what I mean? So we just kind of settle into frustration. But I actually think, Bill, that the most sort of the dominant thread that I tend to see is just boredom, where I don't know, Jesus just kind of gets relegated to background music in our life. We just kind of keep going. We go through the motions of life. We go to work. We do our 9-to-5. We do our thing, and Jesus is there. We go to church. We do all that stuff, but it's kind of a checklist. And the power that God, I think, has for us to transform our everyday life kind of gets put up on a shelf along with the scrapbook and supplies and, you know, whatever else we've kind of put up there. And it was once a hobby. And, man, that's just not the best life. That's just not the kind of life that Jesus promised in John 10:10 when he says, I want to give you life and life to the full. That's not what he's talking about. He's talking about something much, much different. So that's in the book what I'm trying to help people tap into.
Jason, that's a great observation you've made, and I think everything you've said is right on. And I also, I'm wondering, have we lost some of our self-discipline when it comes to growing in our faith and digging deeper into the Word? It's just like, you know, when you first fall in love and the chemicals in your brain go nuts and you just think about the person all the time. It's a little bit like when you become a Christian and you're just so excited that God has set you free and that your everything is so thrilling. And then all of a sudden, after several years, maybe the chemicals in your brain aren't firing the way they once were, and you're feeling a little bit disillusioned with your faith. And you see, like you say, you see other people taking these big risks. And it's like, that's not for me. When in fact, it might be.
I think you're hitting the nail on the head. And I think that, you know, essentially, I heard a quote the other day that said, "You don't fall into love; you commit to it." I love that idea.
I do too.
Because now that doesn't mean the feelings aren't there and all that. I mean, obviously, that might be one of the more unromantic things we could say, but it's true.
Right.
I mean, if you've experienced any depth of relationship, then you know that those feelings are there and that passion's there and all that. But that's not what it's built on. It's built on commitment.
Covenant.
It's built on your willingness to say, I'm committed to you day in and day out, irregardless of anything else.
Right. Right.
And that's the same with God. Like, you know, I mean, with relationship with God, this is about something we give ourselves to because we believe in the end it is best and it is right and it is good. And we're going to wake up again tomorrow. It's just like Paul says when he says, he says this in Colossians chapter 2, verses 6 and 7. He says that just as you first accepted Christ, Jesus is your Lord, so continue to follow him. So that accepting Christ Jesus as our Lord, that's that. What you were mentioning a minute ago, that's that passion, that's that feeling, that's that transformative, man, God, you know, Jesus, you have that moment where you go, I'm at the throes of your grace, and here I am. And Paul says, so then continue to follow him, though. That's the commitment. That's the wake up again tomorrow and choose Jesus all over again.
Mm-hmm.
That's how transformation begins to take place in our life.
Yeah. Jason, I want to talk to you till noon.
we'd have fun, would we?
Oh, yeah, we would. I just want to figure out your take on why Christians have grown bored and frustrated with believing in Jesus. And I want to take a break because I have to. But when I come back, that's where I want to pick up. So be back in just a minute. It is 15 minutes after the hour. We'll take a very short break and be back with Jason Mitchell. Welcome back. It's 17 minutes after the hour. I'm speaking to Jason Mitchell, who wrote a book called No Easy Jesus. And we're talking about moving past just simple belief into experiencing transformation and really living the fullest life that Christ has for us. Jason, we were just before break talking about how easily Christians can appear to have grown bored or frustrated. And sometimes I just wonder about this boredom thing and what are we doing that's creating so much boredom?
Well, you know, one of the passages I love is in Philippians 2 when Paul says to work out the results of your salvation. And I love that passage because it actually has some tension in it, because you see this these two ideas of work and salvation. And, you know, and that passage has been, I think, misunderstood over time, and it's not work for your salvation, because we all know, I mean, when you look at the scriptures, it's clear in the New Testament that you're saved by grace alone, right? It's Ephesians. It's by grace that you're saved and not by works. And yet Paul is saying, and yet there's this element, right, salvation is grace, pure, unadulterated, unfiltered grace. And yet there's this idea where we need to work out the results of that, to see the results of that in our life. You can't be bored with a relationship with God when you wake up each day going, God, I want to see the effects of that salvation live itself out in my life. So it's not today I'm going to do something to earn more of it. It's today I'm going to live in a way in response to it, that I'm already been brought into your family, God, through what Jesus Christ has done for me. And so if salvation is pure, unadulterated grace, I think what Paul's talking about when he's talking about work there is the word grit. And I love that word grit, because it's a character trait.
Yeah.
It's tenacity, it's resilience, it's, you know, it's that sort of stick-to-itiveness, that idea that you get up again tomorrow and you go after that thing that you want the most in life. And Paul's saying, man, when grit and grace, when those two things begin to operate in our life, that's where transformation happens. Transformation happens at that intersection of our grit and God's grace. That's where our hearts are changed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all on God's initiative, all on God's, you know what I mean? It's through his power. But so we're not talking about salvation here. We're talking about transformation. We're talking about the way that God begins to move us into more and more of the likeness of Jesus Christ. And so I think when you commit to that, when you get up and you say, man, I want that. I want to live a life of forgiveness. I want to live a life of generosity. I want to step into the ways of compassion. I want to begin to love like Jesus loved. Every single one of those, that takes enormous reserves of grit.
Mm.
That doesn't happen by accident. You will never accidentally forgive someone. I promise you.
Yeah.
You will never just stumble into generosity. You have to choose these things.
Yeah, you don't
right? You
don't window shop for forgiveness, do you? You pretty much have to be very intentional about it.
That's right.
Well, Jason, go ahead.
I was going to say, so that's what I'm interested in. I'm interested in just helping people understand these choices that Jesus is asking us to make, which he describes as narrow doors. But if we're willing to, you know, when you think about a narrow door, you don't just slide through that. You got to kind of bend down a little. You got to contort your body a little bit to get through a narrow door, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You use that word intention. I love that word, will and intention. And if we're willing to do that on the other side of those doors, man, that's where life is. Life is for us.
I love a passage in Philippians where Paul says, I want to know Christ, yes, to know the power of his resurrection. And I wonder, how often are we as Christians today witnessing the power of his resurrection? Because if that doesn't absolutely light up every switch in your brain, I don't know what would. But when I see someone who's crossed from death to life, I've actually witnessed the power of his resurrection. And I have to tell you that there's nothing boring about that at all. I never, ever, ever get tired of that. My brain fires on all cylinders when I see that and experience that.
Absolutely. And he also uses that idea when he talks about Philippians 2. He says that God who is working in you is giving you, this is in verse 13 of Philippians 2, he says, he's giving you the desire and the power to do what pleases him. So mm-hmm. there's your word power again, right? He's giving you the desire and the power to do what pleases him. And I love that because either one of those, desire or power, one without the other would kind of be pointless because you could have all the desire in the world to live a life that pleases God, but no power to do it. And that would be like having, you know, the best car in the world, but you don't have the keys to drive it. So it's kind of wasted, right? You got all the desire, you just don't have any power.
Right.
Or if you had all the power in the world, but you don't have desire, you'd be you know, frustrated because you can't, you know, not going anywhere, right? Because
yeah.
you don't even have the motivation to do it. But that's not what the scriptures say. The scriptures say that God has given you the desire and the power to live a life that pleases him. So in your marriage right now, for any of your listeners, or you know, in a struggle that you have right now, or maybe it's, you know, you're steep, it doesn't matter what you're stuck in. God, that is a promise. You do not have to stay stuck. But God is saying, I have something better for you. I'm calling you out, and yes, it will be tough. No doubt about it. It's a narrow door.
Mm.
And no, it won't always be easy, but it will be best. And if you're willing to follow me, and if you're willing to live at that intersection of grit and grace, God says, I'll give you all the desire and power you need. That's a promise.
I think you're a born encourager, Jason.
Well, thank you.
Let me ask you this. Now, you also wrote that Jesus can become like background music to a heavily scheduled life. And what is that? What's the answer to trying to bring our faith and our walk back to the forefront of our lives?
Well, you know, I think one of the things, Bill, this is going to be really simple. You know, sometimes we overcomplicate things. So I'm
yeah.
going to give you about the simplest answer to this one.
All right.
And sometimes the simplest answers are the ones where we also, we kind of reject the most.
Mm-hmm.
Here it is, though. People of faith throughout the centuries, when you look at the scriptures, when you look at Jesus, when you look at just people who've come after us and written over the last 2,000 years what they do, there is a practice embedded into their daily lives of sitting down, engaging the scriptures, spending time in quiet prayer, and then getting on with their day and noticing the fingerprints of God all throughout their day, and yet using that time at the beginning of the day. So this is going to probably sound old-fashioned to some people, but I'm a huge believer in this. I think how we start our days sets the trajectory for the rest of the day. And I got kids myself. I've got a busy life. I get all that. That doesn't mean you got to sit down for 3 hours every morning. But I think when I made a decision years ago, I realized that, Bill, that every morning I was waking up, my phone alarm was going off, and all of a sudden I was, before my feet hit the ground, I was already checking my email.
Mm-hmm.
And I was already, before I even got to the closet, I was already checking social media.
Mm.
And I went years doing this, and my soul was dry. I had nothing in the tank. And so I started to really reevaluate some of the patterns in my life. And one of the patterns, one of the commitments I made at that point was, I'm not going to engage technology until I have pointed my heart in the divine direction. And so for me, that just meant I'm not going to be on the phone. I'm not going to do any of that until I have at least sat down and spent. Now, some mornings, that's 5 minutes. Some mornings, that's an hour. So it's not about time. It's about the posture of our heart. It's about sitting down and starting our day that way. So
mm-hmm.
I just find a chair. I grab the scriptures. You know, I just read, and I point my heart in a divine direction. And to me, what that does is that begins to open my eyes to God's, like I said a minute ago, God's fingerprints throughout the rest of the day, because my day started there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can't encourage your listeners enough to say, we've got to make some space for God to talk. I believe God is always speaking. The question, sometimes we're like, I just need God to show up. No, nope, God's shown up. He's already shown up. The question is always, will we show up?
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of that's my take on that we've got to create some space.
Jason, I just took a massive 2-person survey here in the studio, and Rebecca, our producer, and myself, we like you very much. You've been very encouraging, and I can't think of a better way to start the morning with the encouragement you gave us, me, Rebecca, our listeners. It's just been the perfect way to start the day. And I do want to have you back because I've got another half a dozen questions for you about your book.
The
book is once again called No Easy Jesus by Jason Mitchell, How the Toughest Choices Lead to the Greatest Life. Jason, thanks so much and have a great day.
Thanks, Bill. You guys too. Thanks for having me.
Yep. It's 27 minutes after the hour. After a short break, we're going to hear the news, and then we're going to talk to Dr. Kent Kaiser. He'll be in studio, and we'll be talking about everything that's going on in Washington, D.C. Be back in a minute. It is half past the hour. Good morning. Bill Arnold here. Dr. Kent Kaiser just walked in the studio, and he just returned from 2 days in the Boundary Waters where he claims he caught fish. We're going to find out about that just after the news break, and we'll also probably talk about politics and stuff because that's also what we do. Be back in a minute.
Finding encouragement together.
You have strengthened me 1,000 times over in my walk with God, and you've empowered me to then extend God's love, mercy, and grace to others who may be hurting, falling in their walk, or who simply just need some encouragement. He's blessed me to give, and as he continues to lead, direct, and challenge me, I will continue to give. Thank you.
Learning, growing, and strengthening our faith together. Faith Radio.
It's 25 minutes until the top of the hour. When dealing with life's storms, hope and direction can be found in the Bible. Pastor Jim Cimbala highlights some wisdom from James chapter 4, verse 8.
We wonder why people don't feel like they're fed and want to do something else on Sunday. Here's a great verse for us, though, from James. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Now, that is absolutely rock solid for us. But notice when God will draw near to us, when we draw near to him. This is not his plan for America right now, what's happening. It is not his plan. It's rather more of this. You have not because you ask not. If we draw near to him and ask him to revive us individually and our churches, the best is yet to come. I don't care what storm looks like. It's coming. God has something that can conquer that storm.
That is a good word. If you want to hear that full interview, go to our website, myfaithradio.com, and you can hear it. Jim Cimbala is the author and pastor that put that message together. All right, we're going to take a little tiny break, and then Dr. Kent Kaiser is here in studio. Be back in a minute.
The early church defenders of the faith often found themselves defending the faith against those who called themselves Christian. Sound familiar? This is Jim Garlow. A plague of heresies contaminated the early church, many calling themselves Christians, but proposing another gospel. One heretic claimed the God of the Old Testament was not the creator of the universe, but a fickle and lesser God. Apologists for the Christian faith stood firm in defending the faith in their writings and in many cases died for their defense. They helped guard the faith for us, no question. Their defense was scholarly, always courteous, and extremely forceful. And in doing so, they encouraged true believers to hold steady. We learn from history not only our mistakes, but in the case of the early church defenders of the faith, how to live courageously in a culture that ignores and denies the Word of God. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
Almost 22 till the top of the hour. Kent Kaiser is just returned from the Boundary Waters water ski area, where he claims he caught 3 walleye and 2 lobster. So the whole story feels very, very confusing to me right now. But I think I've got a new term because I want to talk about James Comey, and it's Comey-fusing, because this whole thing has gotten to be so confusing.
I think that's right. I don't know what obviously happened with Trump and Comey or their conversations, but there's a lot of back and forth. But we're accustomed to that sort of back and forth with Comey. I think he's made everything about himself. And if you think back to last summer when he was accusing Hillary Clinton of impropriety with emails, she was being investigated, and then, oh, no, you're not. Oh, yes, you are. Oh, no, you're not. Just kidding. You know, it's back and forth almost like a tennis match, and we've got a lot of that kind of thing going on right now in these accusations back and forth between Comey and Trump and his administration. And I think, obviously the Trump administration probably just wishes that Comey be out of the way now. And unfortunately, I think that the bigger picture here is what you said, the confusion. I think, remember back to when Clinton was running for president, the big thing wasn't necessarily this or that, the specifics of any a particular scandal, but it just kind of gave the whole narrative of Clinton being untrustworthy or shady or something like that. And so then that, you know, had an impact on, obviously, on her prospects for being elected. And it's the same kind of thing going on right now. It's not so much any kind of specifics of what might have happened between Trump and Comey. I mean, to some extent for the policymakers in Washington it is, but for, I think, for the general public, for the voters, they're kind of questioning Trump's management style, maybe, or leadership ability and things like this. I mean, we look back at when he was in business and he seemed to be very successful and obviously even built an entire television show around firing people. And here we have an example of him firing one person and it really being a PR disaster. And that's really kind of what it's all about, is that I think that public relations. And we've seen that with a couple of other appointments, you know, with Flynn. And so I think people are probably starting to kind of wonder what's going on. And this Comey sort of confusion is just adding to that whole narrative of, you know, what is Trump about? And why is he not better at dealing with first of all, managing at the White House, and then second of all, dealing with the media around it.
Okay, let's look at what appears to be happening. The Comey memo supposedly shows that Trump is guilty of obstructing justice, but Comey never really said anything about it, and he never really reported it. So isn't it Comey guilty of obstruction of justice? And if it was legit and he didn't report it after he got fired, was he planning on using it later? And why? Is this how you keep your job?
Well, these are some of the questions. And I think going right back to the root question is, was it an obstruction of justice? I mean, the way you read this memo, I mean, I guess it depends on how you read the memo. I didn't think it came across as all that strong armed that it would be obstruction of justice. But I guess other people will decide. I think Trump said something like, I hope you can get past this when, you know, investigation of Flynn and you know, this, the connections with the Russians. And I guess, you know, some judge will probably have to make that decision, or maybe the Supreme Court or something like that, if there's actually or the Congress, if there's actually an investigation of some kind.
Mm-hmm. I just wonder if Trump, being a successful business guy and a million business deals he's been involved with, if he didn't say something like, well, you know, we need to wrap this up.
Well, it's probably about
a business guy would
say. Well, and there's that, not only that, but I mean, I just think that he's kind of probably a no-nonsense kind of guy. Let's just get down to business here. And, you know, probably his style might not be like what people are accustomed to in the government, but I suspect that he didn't have the intention of obstructing justice.
Yeah. So McMaster jumps in on a press conference, and he says this whole thing is wholly appropriate, that – wholly inappropriate of what went on regarding Comey.
Right.
Yes.
And I mean, we've got people who are getting nervous now in Congress, too. I mean, Jason Chaffetz, congressman from Utah, is now expecting to get the information, the memos, and so on, because everybody's getting kind of nervous on the Republican side. You know, how far can they stand with their president? And, you know, at what point do they have to sort of distance themselves?
Yeah. So what are we looking at in terms of a new FBI director? What do you think?
Well, you know, I saw a list of a big list. I saw one took his name out of it, and that's Senator Cornyn of Texas. But he seemed to indicate that he wasn't as qualified as some of the other people who are under consideration, and maybe that's right. But I think that he also thought that he would be better serving the people of the United States by staying a U.S. senator from Texas, which I think is probably correct too. But there was – I saw quite a list, so I don't know exactly what we might expect of the next FBI director. I saw the list had some interesting, you know, diverse characters on it. So I suspect that Trump has options for some good choices.
Yeah. Have you picked a fave yourself?
I have not.
Okay.
So, I mean, I guess I looked at the list and I thought, well, okay, you know, I mean, just looked at kind of their general credentials and thought that, yeah, this is a good list of people and all of them would be probably good for good picks.
How difficult will it be to get someone appointed?
Well, I don't think that'll be all that difficult at this point, honestly. I think that people kind of want to get the will want to get somebody in place, and of course you're going to have Democrats who are going to try to obstruct any kind of
you knucklehead. Come over here, Kent. I'm going to rub the top of your head with my knuckles.
Yeah, but I do think that somebody will get be put in place pretty quick. It's interesting. FBI actually has a really high approval rating with the American people. 80% of the people polled say they approve of the job that the FBI is doing. Mm-hmm. That was not the case for Comey. Only 17% did. So this whole business about the firing, Comey's firing, I think has really been turned into a big political football.
And no kidding.
I don't know. I think probably the average voter out there is saying, well, let's just get past this. This guy got fired, and let's get somebody new in there and let's move along.
Yeah, apparently Comey had no notes when it came to Hillary Clinton. As a matter of fact, wasn't even present at that meeting at the FBI, that famous Saturday where they met for 3 or 4 hours.
Right.
He wasn't even there.
Right.
And he has no notes on her.
Right.
You know, so maybe Trump should have met with Comey on an airplane on a tarmac.
Right. Something like that.
Something like that. We'll take a break. More with Dr. Kent Kaiser, the chair of communications here at the University of Northwestern, fresh back from the Boundary Waters canoe area. Let me get that right this time. Be back in just a minute. Welcome back. It's almost 10 minutes to the top of the hour. Bill Arnold here with you and Dr. Kent Kaiser in studio. And we are just moving on in our conversation to, let's go to healthcare, because why not? It's still around. We're still talking about it. And if we talk about it anymore, I'm going to develop some illness myself, which I'll require healthcare from talking about this. So where are we at with this, Kent?
Well, it looks like the House has passed something, and the Senate's probably going to pass something different, so they're probably going to have to get together to compromise.
That should go well.
You know, yeah. at least it's, you know, Republicans in both houses, so, I mean, they should be able to come to some kind of an agreement. But, yeah, who knows? I mean, at this point, I mean, it's a little bit of trying to save face after they had that whole debacle where the plan that they – were supposed to vote on got pulled back, and it was kind of egg on Trump's face too, because he had pushed for it so much and really actually made an effort on Capitol Hill to get it passed, and then they pulled it back. So I suspect that we will get something by the end of the year, but yeah, who knows.
So as far as healthcare, do you think that Republicans will be able to have the persuasion they need to get this thing to the next level?
Well, this is the
That's
thing.
An awkward
I think that
question.
There's so,
I didn't spit that out
no,
loud,
there's
but
so
you
much,
know where I'm trying
there,
to go
There's
with
so
this.
Much organized opposition to any kind of change now to Obamacare that's very interesting, because there isn't a specific plan that the Republicans had put forth. This is the thing that's the big disappointment for many of us, is that
yeah.
they didn't actually come into the majorities or into having a Republican president with a plan. They could vote for this and that odd plan when they knew it was going to be vetoed by Obama, but they never really came up with an actual plan that would replace Obamacare. And part of the problem is that some don't want to replace Obamacare. Some just want to repeal it and not replace it. And so that's a problem, that they don't have all the Republicans on the same page, and they really should have done that. In fact, it should have been, rather than just running on repeal Obamacare, which is what they did in that last election cycle, they should have run on, we're going to repeal Obamacare, and here's what we're going to replace it with, and get people kind of jazzed up about their alternative. But they absolutely did not do that, because they didn't have one. And it's maddening, actually, for anybody who's a political strategist to look at this kind of thing and see, you know, they were really unprepared.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, here we are electing them to do something good, and they don't even know what they want to do. And it's been that way on a couple of different issues, but this is just one example. I mean, I think we're going to see this problem, too, with tax reform.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, they have a million different ideas, but if they don't coalesce around a specific plan, then nothing's going to happen. And it's very discouraging, I think. I think a lot of the voters will probably be very much discouraged, and I think the Republicans kind of need to get their act together if they expect to be reelected. I mean, they could very well lose a majority, not because people necessarily disagree with the Republicans, but because I think, you know, obviously with a majority now, I mean, I think most Americans probably do agree with Republicans, but they could nevertheless be voted out of office just because they appear not to have their act together and because they seem to be sort of running Washington as usual, where nothing good gets done. And so the pendulum swings. We've seen it so many different times where the pendulum will swing back the other way because, well, this group of clowns can't get anything done, so let's get another group in there, you know? And that's kind of how it goes from one election. We've seen those mad swings from one election to another where now it's the Republicans, now it's the Democrats, now it's the Republicans. And it's not because people particularly the voters who matter are the ones who are making that decision. You know, there's those who are stalwarts on the Republican side and those who are, you know, stalwarts on the Democratic side. But those people in the middle are the ones who are the most influenced by inaction and who get fed up and just say, well, we just need a change. Mm-hmm. And it's not even about any particular policy. And so, but if they saw people being decisive, making good changes, then you'd say, okay, yes, that's who we need to stick with. Mm-hmm. But I just don't know if we have that kind of discipline or maturity within the Congress.
Okay, well articulated, by the way. That's something I was trying to spit out earlier, and you actually expressed that well. Now, Democrats, they want to launch what they call the resistance summer with movement towards impeachment. Is that going to be time well spent?
I think that's a dumb move on their part. Again, I mean, that's not something that people are going to vote on ultimately. I mean, their stalwart supporters are going to love it. They'll eat it up. It's certainly what we call red meat in politics, where they go after Trump, go after the president for whatever kind of accusation they can find. But ultimately, those people in the middle who are voting are going to be sick of that kind of politicking. They're interested in how is something going to benefit them, and it does not benefit them for the president to be impeached. And we saw that back with the impeachment of President Clinton. When he was impeached, people were not impressed. I mean, it was a losing issue for Republicans to be impeaching President Clinton. And I think it would be equally a losing position for Democrats to be trying to impeach President Trump. They're going to try, I'm sure of it.
Yeah, they will.
And, you know, maybe they will impeach him, but I mean, I just don't think that ultimately it gets them individually as members of Congress or people who are running for reelection. I think it gets them very little, if anything.
You know, moving on now, as we're already looking towards further elections, in 2020, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, apparently, in a race today, would beat Trump.
Yeah, I know. I saw that.
You've seen that?
Yes.
Okay. Have you looked for real estate in Canada?
Well, I like The Rock. Okay. But, I mean, you know, I think The Rock is good in movies.
Yeah, you know, like The Rock in movies.
And, I mean, obviously—
We're not dissing The Rock.
The funny thing is, like, any celebrity can say, oh, I'm going to run for office. But then as soon as we get down to the nuts and bolts of what they actually believe, then people start peeling off because they don't necessarily agree with their
right.
idea. I mean, right now, I mean, it's like a blank slate. If you can remain a blank slate, then maybe there's a possibility. That's kind of what happened with Jesse Ventura when he ran for governor in Minnesota. He was this blank slate that people could just project their own, you know, wishes onto. And he had a couple of specific issues where he did articulate a position. But for the most part, I think people really didn't know what they were going to get. And if Dwayne The Rock Johnson can maintain that kind of innocence throughout an election where he doesn't actually have to articulate where he stands on very many issues, but only articulates where he stands on issues that are super important to people, like that are very popular, which is what Ventura did on the state level in Minnesota. Well, then maybe there's a chance somehow. I doubt it, though. I just think that the parties would not allow that, the operatives would not allow that to actually happen.
All right. We only have about a minute left, Kent, and I do want to hear about your trip to the Boundary Waters and your fishing. And remember, one of the commandments is "Thou shalt not lie." Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I don't usually lie too much about my fishing trip. We went into Tuscarora Lake, which is in the center part of the Boundary. Sort of, it's a big portage, a couple of portages in there, but one really a mile long portage. But the fishing was pretty good. It wasn't the greatest I've ever had there. Mm-hmm. I think the ice went out kind of early this year, but we caught lake trout. What's cool about catching lake trout in the Boundary Waters is that God put them there. I mean, these are not planted fish.
Nice.
Like, there's so many lakes in Minnesota, like most of the walleyes in the state have been put there, or
right,
smallmouth certainly, but the lake trout have been there since the beginning. And
yeah,
it's so cool to catch them, and they just naturally reproduce, and they're so tasty. I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
And we had fish for every meal that we were there. We had a little lunch on the way in that, you know, that we had packed, but other than that, we had fish for every meal after that until we came out. So, you know, I'm kind of full of fish. You know, so beautiful.
That's
beautiful weather out there. It was cooler there than,
yeah,
like in the other parts of the state, but yeah, it was just a great
chilly
time.
Chilly at night?
It was about 38 to 40 probably.
That's
at night.
Chilly.
Yeah.
And did you have enough warm clothes?
Oh, yeah. Good sleeping bags.
Yeah, you're probably smart about that, aren't you, those trips? You've taken a lot. How
oh,
many
yeah,
trips to
many.
The Boundary Waters?
I don't know. I mean, I used to run a canoe out for northern Minnesota
really?
For 7 years. So,
so little I know about
so
you.
So pretty familiar with it.
Yeah. All right. Kent, as always, a pleasure, and thank you for coming in. And school is out for summer?
It is.
Did you play that Alice Cooper song?
Yeah, no.
Well, it's always a good song.
Yeah.
You know? So anyway, thanks a lot.
Thanks
Hopefully
for having
I will
on.
See you next week, but I think you're out of town next week, aren't you?
No, I'm around.
Oh, awesome. We'll see you next week.
All right.
All right. It is a couple of minutes till the top of the hour. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to this conversation from Faith Radio Mornings. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Faith Radio Mornings. Also, take a moment to subscribe to this podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player and never miss a show.